You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Joe Crawford.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, April 24th, 2017.
Did you know that according to the National Cancer Institute, at least 70% of new drugs introduced in the United States in the last 25 years were derived from natural sources? The Endangered Species Act protects all of this for us and for our children.
Scientists and science supporters raise their voices at Indianapolis's March for Science. We'll have more in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from a volunteer who translated her personal experiences into being a champion for community accessibility. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The Bloomington Peace Action Coalition is organizing a rally this Wednesday to oppose actions by President Trump. Bloomington Peace Action Coalition spokesperson David Keppel says that the organization wants to avoid another war.
We're gathering to send a strong message to our members of Congress that they have a constitutional responsibility to debate and vote before there is further escalation by the Trump administration in either Syria or Korea or beyond.
The rally is co-sponsored by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and by the Just Peace Task Force of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bloomington. The event, titled Stopping the Next War, urges the public to contact their senators and representatives via email or by phone to oppose any legislative actions that could lead to war.
What we are saying is this is the time, right now, for citizens to join us on Courthouse Square on the 26th. Let's not wait till we're once again paying these terrible costs. Let's speak up now. Let's take action.
The rally will take place at the Courthouse Square on the southeast side from 5:30 to 6:30 in the evening. The next regular meeting of the Bloomington Peace Action Coalition is scheduled for May 1st at the Monroe Public Library.
Special interests, including the Cook Group, played a significant role in a surprise undermining of the city of Bloomington's annexation plans. That's according to officials at City Hall and the State House today. A last-minute effort to kill the controversial annexation succeeded on Friday night as state lawmakers approved a budget bill with language that makes it illegal for the city to proceed with its plans for at least 5 years. The measure only affects Bloomington and will not prevent any other cities from annexing properties. Before the legislature approved the bill on Friday, State Representative Matt Pierce of Bloomington confronted the bill's author, Representative Tim Brown of Crawfordsville.
Who requested that we put this provision in the budget bill that had not passed either house?
Again, it was brought by some citizens and also through one of the other state representatives that represents Monroe County. And some of the businesses of Monroe County, citizens and state representatives and businesses.
Well, that's kind of curious because I hadn't had anybody approach me about putting a provision in the budget bill. Did it occur to you maybe to check in with the person who represents most of the city of Bloomington? Get some feedback on what people are thinking?
Brown did not respond to that question. Pierce went on to say that he had concerns himself about the city's annexation plan, but he said Brown's last-minute legislative maneuver was undemocratic.
And you know that these provisions don't get put in the budget bill by just anybody. I mean, just how many times have we all said, oh man, I really want this if I could just get it in the budget. And 9 times out of 10, that doesn't happen. So I'm just really more concerned about the process. What does it really take to get it in the budget? How much influence and power do you have to have? What do you have to do to get that power and influence?
One of the property owners who would have been most affected by the annexation was the Cook Group, the largest manufacturer in Monroe County. The company expected to pay about $500,000 a year in additional property taxes if the annexation was approved. The communications director at the City of Bloomington, Mary Catherine Carmichael, says the city had been in negotiations with the medical device manufacturer prior to Friday's vote.
We had sat down with representatives from Cook, including Steve Ferguson, and said, how can we make this okay for you and okay for us? And those discussions, again, were aborted because they chose not to discuss, but just to go ahead up to the legislature and get it shut down.
The headquarters for the Cook Group on Daniels Way was slated to be annexed into the city under a plan announced in February by Mayor John Hamilton. State Representative Jeff Ellington, who supported the last-minute budget bill passage, says he did hear others at the State House talking about Cook's concerns.
I'd heard in the hallways that, yeah, Cook was trying to protect their infrastructure out there. But for me, it's about protecting my district.
Ellington represents part of the area that had been proposed for annexation. The plan would have resulted in higher taxes for many of the roughly 15,000 people who would have been annexed into the city under the mayor's plan. In exchange, those taxpayers would have received services from the city, including police, trash, and fire. Ellington was an opponent of the city's annexation plan for months, and he made multiple attempts this year to pass legislation that would undermine the proposal.
I've tried to help push a bill that had been filed that dealt with annexation in the Senate. If I remember right, it did not make it out of committee. The second opportunity was I sent some amendments over to another bill in the Senate. One made it in committee, and then on the seconds on the Senate floor, it got nullified by another amendment. So then I also put my own amendment together in the House and attached it to a bill which I thought was germane. It was ruled not germane. So I had to withdraw it. So I've been talking about this issue at the State House since first week of February.
Ellington was one of the property owners who would have paid higher taxes under the mayor's plan. His business, J.R. Ellington Tree Experts, is located in an area that had been slated for annexation. Among other affected groups, Monroe County officials have voiced relief about the canceled plans in recent days. The county budget was set to take a major hit if the annexation went through. But County Council member Jeff McKim says the issue is not settled.
A lot of it has to do with the provision of services, you know, about fire protection and police protection. And that's the sort of thing we need to gather additional data about. Is the city subsidizing parts of the county in the provision of services or vice versa? Clearly, there is a concern, like I said, or the city wouldn't have brought the proposal forward.
McKim says he would like the state to overhaul its laws regarding annexation. Representatives of Cook Group did not agree to an interview this afternoon, but the chairman of the board at the company, Steve Ferguson, issued a statement explaining his opposition to annexation. Ferguson states, quote, "Many residents throughout the county, including many Cook employees, spoke up and made it clear to their local and state legislators that they were surprised and dismayed by the annexation proposal. They asked for help," unquote.
The Bloomington Plan Commission put plans for an upscale mixed-use development on hold last week. The proposed project would be located on Washington Street in downtown Bloomington. Early in the commission meeting on Monday, case manager James Roach said much of the project was consistent with the city's growth policies plan, unified development ordinance, and downtown overlay plan, but not all of it. The planning staff recommended denying the plan, with Roach stressing that one of the intents of the downtown district is to promote a diversification of residential housing for all income groups and ages.
The GPP has a lot of language about creating a mix of office, commercial, civic, high-density residential, and cultural uses downtown. We want our downtown to be a vibrant, active place. It also talks about creating a diverse housing options available in a range of product types. That's questionable here. Is this petition doing all it can to diversify the housing options downtown?
In last month's Plan Commission meeting, developer Elliot Lewis pushed back against the idea that he should include affordable housing units in the upscale development. The site plan called for 2 four-story buildings at the 200 block of Washington Street between 3rd and 4th Streets. The two buildings would have contained 4,800 square feet of commercial space in addition to the existing bank, 64 residential units, and 68 parking spaces. Steve Volan represents City Council District 6 downtown. Volan told the commission the developer could have traded parking slots for affordable housing units.
This building is south of 4th Street, and in the UDO that we passed in 2006, buildings south of 4th Street are allowed to build zero parking. The simplest way that the developer could have offered affordable housing here would have been to reduce or eliminate parking altogether. Now, the reason developers don't want to do that is because it makes it harder to charge premium rents, because premium renters expect to be able to put their car somewhere.
Case manager James Roach cited additional reasons for denying the plan, including an issue with the plan's use of an existing drive-through at the bank and a step-back requirement due to the height of the building. Tim Culver with Studio 3 Design spoke for the project's design team. Regarding the criticism the plan did not provide diverse housing, Culver said the downtown vision plan recommends it but does not require it. Culver also said the Plan Commission has waived step-back requirements in other plans in the past.
This waiver has routinely been granted in every hearing that I've been a part of over the last 10 years. It has been granted for four-story buildings, especially those that are meeting height requirements. And in previous hearings, staff has taken a different approach in pointing out the intent of this, I'll still call it a waiver, and setback standard was to be applied to structures over four stories.
Commission member and City Council Representative Isabel Piedmont-Smith said her constituents want more diverse housing downtown. She also took issue with parking.
Furthermore, as far as diversity of housing in the downtown, this is obviously a market-rate student housing complex, like all the other complexes by Elliot Lewis. That's great. I mean, we need those. We have them. We have plenty of them. Whenever I talk to constituents, everybody complains. Downtown is only for students. I don't go there anymore. It's just a student neighborhood. They want more diversity. I'm on this council as a representative. I'm on this commission as a representative from the City Council, as a representative of the people of Bloomington, and I have heard over and over again that they want more diverse housing downtown so that it's not just a student neighborhood. I think Mr. Boland had a good point about the parking. This is right across the street from the transit center. This would have been a great opportunity for innovation as far as transit-oriented development, having focus towards individuals who will use transit instead of parking.
Commission members Daryl Nair and Brad Whistler said they were troubled by planning staff bringing forward new concerns that had not been voiced when the commission first reviewed the project. Whistler said he didn't like, quote, changing the rules in the middle of the game. Nair said the conflict surrounding the proposed development is a clear example of the city's need for a new unified development ordinance and comprehensive plan. The commission denied approval of the plan on a vote of 5-4. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Scientists and science supporters spoke out across the globe on Saturday, which was also Earth Day. Correspondent Sarah Vaughn reports on the Indianapolis March for Science in today's WFHB Community Report.
It's estimated that 10,000 people marched for science in Indianapolis on Earth Day Saturday. The march was one of more than 600 marches launched across the globe to pressure policymakers to use evidence-based science in their decision-making. Guest speakers and participants alike voiced concern for climate change, the protection of public health and public lands, as well as a growing trend to debunk and dismiss science. Jason Rylander, an attorney with D.C.-based Defenders of Wildlife, said the web of life that supports many species is unraveling. He spoke to the importance of the Endangered Species Act. President Trump has said the nation's environmental rules are, quote, out of control.
Did you know that according to the National Cancer Institute, at least 70% of new drugs introduced in the United States in the last 25 years were derived from natural sources? The Endangered Species Act protects all of this for us and for our children.
Indianapolis tech entrepreneur Nick Birch stressed the need for education reform to strengthen science and math curriculum. Birch said a growing tech sector needs science-savvy creative problem solvers.
According to an analysis by the Brookings Institution, the tech sector in central Indiana grew by almost 14% annually between 2013 and 2015. Those are high-skilled but also high-paying jobs, and you don't necessarily need a college degree to get into those careers.
Indiana Forest Alliance Conservation Director Dr. Ray Schnaub cautioned that policymakers were using science as a delay tactic.
In these days of hot debate about what constitutes sound science, I think it's important to remember that all science is incomplete. It's a work in progress. Often, demands for scientific proof are just delay tactics for inaction. And I think it's also important to differentiate between what is really scientific debate and what are essentially economic and policy decisions.
Jesse Carbonda, the executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, issued several calls to action.
Write to the governor, veto SB 309, an anti-rooftop solar bill whose core provision, which the leading lawmaker pushing for this bill has admitted is arbitrary, not based on careful economic analysis. The heights that we have to ensure that science drives our decision-making seem so high, seem so distant. First, be involved in redistricting and campaign finance reform. Second, actively recruit the kind of Americans that you want to see in office who are compassionate, strong, and who have a deep love of science. Third, change the culture in community. Lift up your kids when they show a real interest in biology, chemistry, physics, and the social sciences. Invite scientists to your schools and communities so that scientists can know that there are people there standing up with them.
Hoosier Environmental Council's Jesse Carbonda acknowledged the struggle that comes with creating a government that bases its policy decisions in science.
But our forefathers and our foremothers show the way in fighting systems that were patently wrong, from slavery to Jim Crow to severe discrimination, and they won by the force of truth and by their unwavering courage.
Among those marching was retired manufacturing engineer Tom Blake and his wife. Blake said he was marching because he supports facts.
I support data-driven solutions, and science is an important tool towards understanding data and generating facts. And opinions and conjecture and things like that that are not based on facts and not based on data are difficult to justify. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong, but it just means that they're difficult to justify.
How would you try and convince somebody who thinks that, you know, scientists and the other folks manipulate the data to support what they want?
Science, how do I say this? True science is peer-reviewed, okay? And one of the real values of peer review is to have lots of people out there who are not necessarily affiliated with what you're trying to do look at what you've done and say yes or no, this was done right or not.
I think you have to look for consensus. There's nothing's ever completely knowable, but at some point there's enough of a consensus in the scientific community that you can accept that they have truth.
Here are some more voices from the March for Science in Indianapolis.
Well, I am concerned about the climate, as we all should be. You know, it's cliche, but we do all breathe the same air, and we all live on this planet. But I also believe that just basic sciences are being ignored. Basic sciences that have helped build this country so far. And if we turn our back on what has been our foundation, I think that it'll lead to our fall. My name is TJ Withington.
Tell me your name and what your field is.
Andy Knust, and I'm a civil engineer.
Why did you feel it was important to come out today?
Because, well, science is important. It tells us about our world. And if we don't trust in science, we are not making informed decisions, and our future is at risk. We need our leaders to make informed decisions about the future of climate change and how that impacts our environment and impacts our agriculture and impacts our other, you know, economic systems are really dependent on the climate.
You want to tell me why science is important to you?
There's too much of a lack of science and people that actually believe and should stand up for science right now. Especially with the climate change, there's too many disbelievers that spread the culture of disbelief from America to other places, that we should be leading that charge and belief in that change, that we can make that change to do a 100% renewable resources and get completely off of fossil fuels and just shoving money into corporations.
Do you guys think that this march will entice people who are maybe ambivalent about science or anti-science to take a closer look?
Oh, absolutely. It should. And if not, then people should take a step back and look at themselves and think about the future that they're leaving for everybody. It's the world. It's not just lines drawn on a map. It's the entire world.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The organizers of the March for Science in Indianapolis are encouraging Hoosiers to participate in a week of action this week. They've got daily tips on their Facebook page. Locally, a group of IU scientists led by Professor Emeritus Stephen Vigdor will be lobbying Senator Joe Donnelly this week for support for science.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Barbara Salisbury, and I chair the Monroe County Coalition for Access and Mobility, which is a transportation coalition, and I'm the president of the Heartland Association of the American Council of the Blind, which is the local chapter of ACB, and I'm the vice chair, or the vice president of the state affiliate to the American Council of the Blind. Starting with the premise that I am blind, so transportation is very important to me. And I see transportation, for example, it's the glue that holds that ability together to be independent. You can live in the most accessible community, but if you can't get around within that community, it doesn't matter. I think it's freeing. The more independent you can be, the more free you are. I see transportation that way. If you can be mobile, you have freedom. And I'm very passionate about that. Transportation, of course, impacts me personally, but there's always new approaches. There's always more than one way to skin a cat. So it's great to have multiple people together looking at that. And in our coalition, we do. We have people from all kinds of segments of the community involved at different times, but involved, and so that gives us, you know, that ability to have multiple perspectives. It jazzes me to get people, the average citizen, involved in planning. It's important because people of all abilities working together are going to bring perspectives to planners that maybe they didn't think about. We want our community to be accessible, quote, for all people. And that's, you know, mothers with strollers can use the same accommodations that somebody in a wheelchair has to have. So it works for everybody, and it can work for everybody, and that's really the way it should be viewed. And it is the way it's viewed. Honestly, it's becoming more and more that way. Planners and developers are starting to really look at it from that perspective rather than let's make these accommodations for people with disabilities. I'm just really passionate about helping people, particularly people who are blind, and that's probably because of my personal perspective, but people in general with disabilities, helping them achieve the greatest independence, level of independence that they can. Thanks for listening. My name is Barbara Salisbury, and the organizations I'm with now is the Monroe County Coalition for Access and Mobility and the Heartland Association of the American Council of the Blind.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Tara Fahimi and myself, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was also produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.